Welcome to KPFK 90.7, 98.7 in Santa Barbara. My name is Damon Azali, and I'm here with my co-host, Eric Mann, and this is the Voices from the Frontline segment of the 4 o'clock Public Affairs Hour. Today, we will have Ayuko Babu of the Pan-African Film Festival that is going to be going on February 5th through 16th. We will also be having two directors that have films in the Pan-African Film Festival today. One is Laura Lipson, who is the director of Standing on My Sister's Shoulders, an award-winning documentary that follows the Mississippi women that became leaders of the civil rights movement. We will also have Jennifer Abad, the director of The Edge of Each Other's Battles, The Vision of Audre Lorde. This film is about the black, lesbian, feminist, socialist poet, Audre Lorde, whose work and life has contributed profoundly to the black arts movement, the black women and lesbian gay liberation movements.
Hi, everybody. This is Eric Mann. Ayuko Babu, are you on the phone?
Yes, sir.
How you doing, Babu?
Good. Hello, everybody.
Good. Hello. One thing I wanted to start with before we get into some of the films is, you know, we think about institutions like Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which might have lasted no more than 4 or 5 years. Students for Democratic Society that I was in lasted, I don't remember, 6 or 7 years before it broke up. Holding together an institution is very hard. How long is is the 12th Pan-African Film and Arts Festival? As long as I've been in L.A., you've been the main public person. What's it like holding an institution together for 12 years? And I'm sure there's some times when you're not sure it is going to hold together.
Well, we like to say that this is a continuing SNCC project. I was in SNCC also. I didn't go south. I was part of SNCC when SNCC moved north in the Black Power Movement with Kwame Ture and H.R.F. Brown and Angela Davis and that whole piece. This is a continuing project of that project. So it's very difficult. Different names, you know, like the Bus Ride Union acts as a continuation of Student Nonviolent SDS in a certain level, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. And SNCC,
and the project in Newark, you know, remember you way back in Newark. But it's been a challenge, but my position is that somebody has to do it. Somebody has to create these platforms, and so that's what we do.
I think it's a very good observation, since the two of us do know each other pretty well, that the Labor Community Strategy Center, which Damon and I are members, definitely has its roots in SNCC, as well as the Black Panther Party, as well as SDS. So it's very well taken. Great point that we are trying in our own way to maintain those traditions. Tell me about the dilemma of getting good political films these days in terms of a Pan-African film festival. At a different historical moment, revolution was the central mass question. We're in a more conservative historical period, although I think there's some exciting things happening. And every year you have to come up with a broad united front of films, and I'm not proposing they all should be political. But tell us the question of getting good political films, and why don't you tell us some of the films in the film festival that you think are good political films?
Well, I think that the challenge is, as you say, we're in a certain period where there's Hollywood dominates everything, and the cops always win, you know, and the revolutionary hustlers always get caught. That kind of, you know, thing happens. It's difficult. We have to go all over the planet looking for films, going to film festivals, going to the African Film Festival in Burkina Faso, which is our sister festival. It's called the Pan-African Festival of Cinema and Television. Going to Europe to the African Film Festival in Milan, Italy. Going to Havana, down to the Cuban. You just have to go all over and stay on the computer trying to find these films, and then make some kind of judgment how to balance the quote-unquote more conscious films and higher quality films with what we call popcorn cinema. Popcorn Cinema was coined by Wole Soyinka, the first black man to win the Nobel Prize in Literature for Nigeria. He gave a speech in Burkina Faso a few years ago where he talks about popcorn cinema, which is where the popcorn, the amount of money you make on popcorn is important to the money you make on cinema. And so trying to balance it, because we've got to have a little bit of popcorn in there so that folks will come out and get some popcorn and see something conscious. That, in many ways, becomes more of a challenge than finding certain political films, because there's a lot of actual political films being made on a certain level. But the real challenge is trying to find a platform and a context by which, you know, we get folks to come out and see them, and don't just let 4 people show up to see them and 100 people show up to see Love, Sex, and Eating the Bone, you know. That's, which is one of our films, by the way. From Canada, it's a popcorn love thing, so come out and enjoy that too, you know.
So, Babu, what are some of the actual films that are more of the political nature that some of our viewers might be interested in?
We have some incredible films. One is, of course, and I view it as political, film of Audre Lorde, which the sister on the phone will talk about
right.
a little later. That's very important, and because and Stand on Our Sister's Shoulders is extremely political, which also the other lady will talk about with Miss Fannie Lou Hamer and those folks. But some less-known films that we've actually had a chance to show, it's a film called Aftermath from Kenya by a young filmmaker called Judy Kabingi. And this is dealing with the youngsters. In fact, in the paper today, there's an article in the L.A. Times about the children soldiers in Sierra Leone and Liberia. Well, this film deals with that. It's set in post-war Sierra Leone and about a young man who's been abducted and put into this army and does all these horrible things. He comes back to his village and how the village deals with it and how he deals with it. If you want to get a real sense of what's behind that story you saw today, and what's even deeper is to see this film called Aftermath. That's extremely an important film. Another film that I think hasn't got much play and needs to be seen is A Kalahari Family. And by the way, Aftermath is Friday, the 6th of February at 7:15. A Kalahari Family is an awesome political film that starts out in the 1950s with the footage of the so-called Bushmen, who are really called the Sand People, in the Kalahari Desert being filmed by National Geographic filmmakers. And it takes their life, this particular family, with these filmmakers and brings it down to 2003. Shows them when they ceased to be hunters and gatherers and they started to become farmers and the farmers weren't working. It actually has footage of the South African soldiers coming in and recruiting them in the 1970s to be trackers against the African National Congress and Mr. Mandela, down to them organizing under Namibian independence and South African independence. And what's interesting is that you get a chance to see they were asked to be in Guys Must Be Crazy, and now they're battling the ecology movement, if you can believe that or not, the ecology and the sustainable economy movement, because what has happened is a lot of those movements have advocated that these bushmen go back to hunting and gathering and cease to be farmers and let tourists come in and be dependent upon the tourists to protect the animals, you know, the elephants, because they're always at war with the elephants. It's an incredible, incredible political tale of what happens to a people with the rise of globalization, with the rise of the ecology movements, with the rise of independence, with the collapse of apartheid. It's 150 minutes. It's an incredible documentary that I urge everybody to get out and see.
When is that playing?
That's playing Wednesday, February 11th at 1 o'clock. And there's another film that I'm excited about. It's called Birdman Tale from Indonesia. It's set in Papua New Guinea, and it deals with the political activist that's in hiding against all the right-wing political oppression against him. At the same time, he's into learning to play the piano, and his son's in love with a woman. But it deals with, in an incredible way, what's going on in that part of the world that I think you should see. It's called Birdman's Tale from Indonesia. That's Saturday the 7th at 5 o'clock, Thursday the 12th of February at 1:45, and Monday the 16th at 11:15.
And Bubba, we're actually going to have you give out the website at the end of the show so people can go on to the website and see their description of all these films.
Right.
I wanted to ask you a slightly more personal question, or at least a question more about personal choice. I know from last year's film festival, when you were talking to Danny Glover, you guys were talking about your roots in the movement for social justice.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see kind of what was your path and decision making to actually make this kind of your main form of struggle to keep building the civil rights movement and the social justice movement, the Black Power movement, et cetera.
What was my path?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. In the South.
Or why did you choose to really to highlight this as your main work, as opposed to being an organizer on the front line or being a professor or whatnot?
Well, I actually was asked to do this by some political folks in the Republic of Guinea, specifically by a man by the name of Gilbert Minot, that was in charge of the entire Guinean film industry. And at that time, I was helping folks move capital, invest in progressive countries in Africa, Guinea, and so forth, and doing work, that kind of work. And I was asked to get involved and help develop this whole rising new African film industry, because they felt that the political struggle at this point and the main struggle in terms of culture is what gets up on the big screen. The fight, there's in fact a book called The Struggle for Control of World Cinema. The cultural battle for control of the minds of the people is what's on the big screen, what's on the small screen, what's on the television. And the Gilbert and other political folks in Guinea asked me to begin to bring their films into the market in the United States so they could do a couple of things. One, they were under pressure by the government to say, hey, what's happening? Let's get these films out here. Two, they knew that they saw that with Mr. Mandela coming around the country and mobilizing all those people in 1990 to put pressure on George Bush to not lift sanctions until he said lift sanctions in South Africa. They saw that with the collapse of the Soviet Union, the cultural question in terms of getting people to understand what's going on in the world really is a question of film, in addition to, because, you know, it's hard to get people to read and so forth and so on. It's easy to get people to see films, and then next time there's a struggle around the question of South Africa or Iraq, for instance, or, you know, other things. You got films out here that they've seen films, they have a better understanding, so they asked me to get involved. That's how I got involved in it.
Well, you don't. I think it's tremendous because obviously, the role of ideology. There's so many oppressed people in the United States, and so few fighting right now. So we have to figure out what's going on, and one of them is the role of ideology.
Mm-hmm.
And film is an essential front line, as you say. The culture wars. What was it? Both Gramsci and Marcuse, mm-hmm. the others talked about. The way the United States uses hegemony through its own ideology, and the people are quite brainwashed. So
exactly.
This is great stuff. You don't have to, certainly we weren't asking to justify it. We were more,
oh, no.
You know, because I think it's an absolute frontline work. You know, this is shows called Voices from the Frontlines, and I think you know that we think this is of it. I want to segue into Soldiers of the Rock. I've been to South Africa twice in the last 2 or 3 years, once to the World Conference Against Racism, and I urge our listeners to, if they want to, get a copy of my book, Dispatches from Durban, about the World
Absolutely.
Conference Against Racism, which is at www.frontlinespress.com, I believe it's like .com. And then I went back to the World Summit on Sustainable Development in Johannesburg. First one was in Durban. One of the things that was very disturbing to me is there's a widespread, I would say, both Trotskyists and ultra-left view that's very dismissive of the Black Power movement in South Africa and almost wants to know 10 years later how come they don't have socialism,
mm-hmm.
when I don't think the people critiquing South Africa have an understanding of what an incredible revolutionary breakthrough it is to have a very honest, democratic, socialist-oriented government operating in the middle of a world capitalist, you know, dictatorship.
Exactly.
You know? So there were a lot of these people critiquing, for instance, Mbeki, and then we go up and there's Mbeki saying, I want to introduce my two best friends. One was the Cuban government, and the other was the Palestinian government. And I turned to some of these people and said, the nerve of you Americans, white and black, but mainly white, and some South Africans, to critique this government as if it's almost the apartheid government. Nothing wrong with critiquing it. That's not the point. But the sort of leveling of, well, that was good that you overthrew apartheid, but what have you done for me lately?
Mm-hmm.
Now, why don't you, in that context, tell us a little bit about Soldiers of the Rock, and where does that enter into the internal debate within South Africa? And one second, I think they want to do a station ID. I gave you the question. I'll give you a second to come up with the answer. This is KPFK, 90.7 FM. Give them your money when the fundraise comes up next week. And we're with Ayuku Babu, who's going to answer those questions.
Okay. Number one, that's a good question. First of all, as you said, the leadership of South Africa are seasoned progressives, seasoned socialists, seasoned folks who've been around a long time and have watched, and interesting history and whatever you may say, mystically, spiritually, whatever, has fallen to them to kind of watch everything go down before they came on the scene in terms of seizing, you know, political power. And so they have had a chance to synthesize what's going on and try to figure out how to best form a process of liberation that can sustain itself and maintain itself and go forward. Part of that process is that they've launched two policies. One is called the African Renaissance, which is the Cultural Revolution, equivalent to the Cultural Revolution, where you say, okay, we've taken power, now we've got to find a mechanism by which we can transform our consciousness. And they're using culture and films and books and movies and so forth to transform the consciousness of the masses of our people so that we will remain progressive and try to develop a society that is about liberation and development. The other policy that goes hand in hand with that is what they call black empowerment, where they have a mixed economy, and within inside the private sector they're saying form cooperatives so that you can begin to take back our economy and give some opportunities to folks to change and develop and grow. Now, this film is a combination of both of these policies. Soldiers of the Rock is a film that was encouraged as a result of being part of the African Renaissance. Let's create work, cultural work, which will elevate and raise the consciousness of the masses and give them some energy and give them some direction, help them look at themselves, and so they can go forward in the tasks that they face. So the filmmaker made this film. It was supported by the South African government and got international agency support as a result of the South African government's intervention, saying, look, support our culture initiative by giving money, Rotterdam, so forth and so on. And they picked up all the below cost for the film, and it's designed for the South African urban masses and the peasantry to look and see what's going to give us some energy. Now, at the same time, what the story is about these miners who we've all heard about. These miners, we all grew up in the 50s and 60s and 70s with all the horror stories of what had happened to the miners. 80,000 died in the last 50 years of, you know, wretched conditions. So this film is set in 1999, a few years after majority rule, and it looks at these miners who are in these horrible conditions, and one day somebody raises the question to them that notwithstanding all these horrible conditions, they've developed some skills and understanding about what's going on with mining. Why don't they own their own mine and form a cooperative, following that policy of black empowerment? And the story is dealing with the fact that, hey, I've been a miner all my life. I mean, are you saying I can really try to own this? Can I really empower myself? So the story is dealing with the anguish and the frustration and the alienation that miners go through, how to be able to go from being a miner to trying to see how to form a cooperative and own this. And it shows all the contradictions of the mine, the way the under apartheid had the mine set up. They had the Zulus at 12 miles down. They had the Xhosas at 4 miles down. So you had a situation with antagonistic ethnic overcoming all those issues, overcoming the issue between I'm illiterate, uneducated, and there's somebody who's educated and literate who's raising this question. All of the issues that they're being confronted with down in South Africa, this film deals with, it's a film that's not to be missed.
Well, this, of all the ones, this is the one I'm, you know, there's a million that goes, well, not a million, but a lot to go to, but this one I see is this Thursday, right, at 6:45, but it's also
it's
on
Thursday, February the 12th.
And it's also Sunday.
So we're doing that in conjunction with the South African consulate, and then we're going to come back on...
Sunday.
Let's see, come back on Sunday the 15th
at 7:25.
So it's two, you get two opportunities to see this film. And we want to have a great discussion. I want you to be a part of the discussion because it really does show where South Africa is, where it's trying to go, and what the contradictions and issues are. Now,
and it's also one more thing, Bob. We got a couple of minutes. I just want to get in that about 15 years ago, I went to Stearns, Kentucky, during one of these. Wildcat strikes that even the United Mine Workers wasn't sure if it was supporting at the time. And this was mainly white southern, you know, white Appalachian miners. And you got to go see a coal mine to believe it. I mean, besides everything else about the black liberation movement, this is about the conditions of a black working class.
Exactly.
Which people in L.A. are generally clueless about. That there are people, as you say, the distinction is who's working 4 miles down versus who's working 12 miles down under the ground. And these miners, I had to say, I was deeply moved by them. You know, and they paid me this great compliment. I worked with them for about a week, and they said, you know, Eric, you'd be a great miner. And I thought, man, that was, you know, I'm not sure I want to be one, but, and they would show me that they had, like, scars on their arms from the electric...
Yeah.
From the electric wires that were down in the mine that would hit the water and throw sparks all over them. I mean, I just think that this is an amazing combination of a black working class, a particular working class with all its history, and then the fight over post-apartheid development among, you know, workers debating something.
This, you hit it on the head. I mean, you see all of that in this film. You feel all that in this film. You really get a chance, everything that you're saying, to the listening audience, what he's saying, you will get a chance to see up front. Also, there's an interesting cultural, example of the cultural hegemony of the United States, which we talked about before, is that this film has been passed on in Toronto by all the major studios. And now we're trying to get some other folks to pick it up and at least get it into video, get it on television and the cable because people need to see this film. And it's going all over the continent of Africa, country by country, for people to see. And here's an example of cultural hegemony. In the film, you'll see the miners who were the backbone of the ANC struggle and the trade unions, all the miners belong to, that stepped in and participated in the destruction of apartheid. These are the real heroes of this world. Well, these brothers are 12 miles down and 4 miles down. They got Tupac tattooed on their breasts, and it's like, hey, you are the real revolutionaries. Tupac was talking about you. But then again, Tupac was so strong in terms of his reflection about the horrible conditions that these brothers in South Africa heard it and tattooed Tupac on their breast.
Ayuka, I'm gonna have to transition out now. Let me just a couple of quick things. I'm with Ayuka Babu, who's the executive director of the Pan African Film Festival. Now we do the politics. Give us all the plugs, the times, the websites, the. And we urge everybody throughout the greater Los Angeles diaspora to show up at the Magic Johnson Theater for the next 10 days. Why don't you give us the information?
Okay, I will. One last thing. The Agronomist by Jonathan Demme is another documentary. It's a documentary that's not to be missed. It's the story of Jean Dominique, the brother who developed the Radio Haitian International and was assassinated a few years ago. He's made a stunning documentary on the whole struggle in Haiti, centered around this brother who created the underground radio stations in Haiti. It's called The Agronomist, and that's Sunday the 15th at 4:30.
And just end with the website because you're out of time, brother.
www.paff.org, corner of Crenshaw Boulevard and Martin Luther King Boulevard, for 12 days from the 5th through the 16th. Come out and enjoy these wonderful films and art shows. 100 major painters, artists in the mall, too.
Thanks for all your tremendous work. I'll
Thank
be seeing you.
You
at a lot, as many of these shows as I can.
See you then.
Take good care.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Eric Mann with Damon Azali. We're on the Voices from the Frontline at the 4 o'clock segment. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM. Damon, why don't you tell us about our next guest?
We'll be right back in a minute after a brief break with Laura Lipson, who is the director of Standing on My Sister's Shoulders, which is a film that's going to be showing at the Pan-African Film Festival.